Okay, let's test your knowledge of the Bible. First question, who wrote the Pentateuch? Possible answers. What's a Pentateuch? Did you say Penn and Teller? Moses. How do you want to vote? Good choice. Okay, next question. What do the books of history cover? Possible answers. History. A lot of pages in the Old Testament. Or Israel's rise and fall and restoration. How are we doing so far? Question number three, what are the books of poetry for? Number one, to provide witty sayings for future fortune cookie makers. Number two, to inspire the birds to write Turn, 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 or Taylor Swift to write Lover. Or to give us God's best practices for how to live life. Are you with me so far? Question number three, what are the prophets? Number one, what everyone is losing in the stock market right now? Something like the vertically challenged fortune teller who escaped from jail. Did you hear about the vertically challenged fortune teller who escaped from jail? They said it was a small, medium, at large. Or is a prophet a guy who told people what God wanted people to hear? How are you doing so far on this test? Pretty good? Good, it's going to get harder. Like, if God can just think something and it happens, why would he make angels to go do things for him? Or why did God spend a whole book of the Bible giving directions for a tent that he was going to live in? Or why is God so bloodthirsty ordering all those people and all those animals to be slaughtered all the time? Or who the heck is Melchizedek? Or how did a murderer eventually become president of God's country? The answer to these questions, a lot of Christians would say, I don't know, your guess is as good as mine. But that's not really true. A good guess, based on what evidence you have, is much better than a bad guess. Life is really better when you have the necessary knowledge to understand the conversations that you're in. For example, when I hear people talking about the Buffalo Bills, I know the players, I know the song, I know the uniform, I know the history, I know the problems. I can listen and enjoy any conversation about the Buffalo Bills as much as you can enjoy a conversation about the Buffalo Bills. But I went to a meeting recently where parents and teachers and providers were all meeting together to talk about helping students who have specific challenges in life. And they were talking about OPWDD and Front Door and care coordination organizations and self-direction liaisons and ISPs and ARC and MNOPOQRSTs, and I didn't know any of the stuff that they were saying. But Erin O'Brien does, and she said some stuff there, and other people listened to what she said, and they smiled and nodded. And I learned a lot from sitting in that voice meeting, like, for instance, what voice means. But I didn't really know enough to know what was going on. And I'm guessing that Erin enjoyed that meeting much more than I did. It is better to have some understanding of what people are talking about when you're in the middle of a conversation. For example, Eric and Ken and I went on a missions trip last year. And on that trip, we did a lot of baseball trivia because Eric and I love baseball trivia. But Ken less so. But he heard us say Ty Cobb a lot. So eventually, whenever we were stumped, when we were just sitting there and had no answer, almost always Ken would say, Ty Cobb? And surprisingly, several times he was right. But some people on the trip did not know anything about baseball at all and did not want to play. They wanted us to do ballet trivia. And they said, here, let's do some trivia that we like. Name a ballet move. And I immediately said, jeté. And I was pretty proud of myself. And they said, nice, name another. And I thought for a moment, and I said, another jeté. And they said, right. How about name a ballet person? And it got real quiet for a while. And then Ken said, Ty Cobb? If you are well versed in something, you get much more out of the conversation than if you're not. You've got a better shot at winning if you know something about the game that you're playing. Do you watch Wheel of Fortune? right? We all watched Wheel of Fortune, but some people really watch Wheel of Fortune. So this lady recently was asked to solve a puzzle, and the letters they gave her are R-S-T-L-N-E at the end, and she picked P-C-D-O, so she ended up with this as her puzzle. And the category, which is so helpful, was, what are you doing? And in under 10 seconds, in about 5 seconds, she got the answer. And the answer was, I'll tell you in a bit. But she got the right answer. And the only reason in the world she could have possibly gotten the right answer under those circumstances is she watches way too much Wheel of Fortune. So we're starting a new sermon series today. And I know that Lent started this week, and I am aware of the special days, Fat Tuesday, Ash Wednesday, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Palm Sunday, rainy days and Mondays always get me down. And I am aware that lots of churches are in the middle of doing down sermons, sad, sorrowful, repentant sermons. But this Lenten season, I thought as a church, we would go off the board and dig through a whole book of the Bible. Want us to spend the next 40 days heading towards the resurrection, towards Easter, through a study of the book of Hebrews. But it's always better if you have some idea of what's being talked about, right? So let's review. What do we know about Hebrews? You probably know that it's a 13-chapter book near the back of the New Testament. And you might know that it was written to people who follow Jesus. And if you really know something, you probably know that it's got crazy amounts of the Old Testament baked into it. There are lots of Jewish references in this book. Lots of sacrifices, lots of priests, lots of tabernacles and sheep and king stuff. All that stuff's in there. But the more you know about Israel's history, the more you can understand Hebrews. I mean, you need to know more about Israel's history than just the jokes. So I collected the jokes that I've told. How does Moses make his tea? He brews it. What is an Israelite? It's a Jewish man who recently lost 50 pounds. Did you hear about the Jewish company that advertised, remember, we're always available 24/6. There are so many references to God's dealings with the Jews in the book of Hebrews. And the more you know about the Old Testament, the better you're going to enjoy the study of Hebrews. But if you don't know a lot, don't worry. We do footnotes in sermons here. We'll explain stuff as we go. Another thing that you need to know as we head into Hebrews is that it's actually a sermon. It's not a book. It's a sermon. I heard a guy once define a sermon as a vaguely religious kind of short speech. The author of Hebrews defines it as something else. In Hebrews 13:22, he says, brothers and sisters, I urge you to bear with my word of exhortation, for in fact, I have written to you quite briefly. He calls it a word of exhortation. He is exhorting Christians. He's explaining the scriptures and applying it to their lives. This book is a sermon. But the author says this 13-page sermon is actually quite brief. And Hebrews is way more intense than a vaguely religious speech, but it is kind of a long speech. I once had a junior high girl listen to me preach one time, and afterwards, as she walked out, she said, Mr. Walker, I just realized your sermons aren't long. They just seem that way. I said, thanks, Jamie. I really appreciate that. One man was leaving the building one time, and he shook my hand, and he said, your sermon today, John, it was like water to a drowning man. And at first it sounded kind of nice, right? But the more I thought about it, we tape sermons here every Sunday, and if all goes well with our technology, you can listen later at our website. But they didn't have that tech back then. And sometimes when somebody would preach a sermon, they would write it down afterwards. And this sermon has been preached. This book of Hebrews is a sermon that's been preached and then written down for others to read. There are several clues that this has been preached out loud. There's a famous radio preacher who is always saying, listen now. Listen now. And you would not say that if you were writing somebody a letter. And there are parts in Hebrews that are kind of saying, listen now, letting us know that this was a real sermon. Plus, sermons have major points and illustrations to help the listeners get the point. And Hebrews does that over and over again in its 13 chapters. Plus, letters that are written in the New Testament usually have two sections. There's usually a doctrinal section first and then a practical section at the end. For example, Ephesians has 3 pages on what God did to fix the world, and then there are 3 pages at the end on how we can help him do that. Colossians has 2 pages in the beginning on Jesus' greatness, and then there are 2 pages on how that impacts how we treat each other. In a letter in the New Testament, there's usually a what's so part, and then there's a so what part. And those are very distinct parts. But in a sermon, you mix all those things together. And Hebrews has believing and behaving all entwined. Some Christian somewhere once sat and listened to a guy say what we're going to study over the next 40 days. He preached a sermon and we're going to eavesdrop on it. In fact, God wants us to eavesdrop. He liked the sermon so much that he included it in the Bible. And there are some really good lines in this sermon. For instance, there's stuff about Jesus. In Hebrews 2:9, it says, but we see Jesus, who was made lower than the angels for a little while, but now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. Hebrews 2:18 says, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, Jesus is able to help those who are being tempted. In chapter 4, it says, we don't have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who's been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. There are doctrinal, there's a very famous chapter 13 where it says in this sermon, he said, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. There's doctrinal teaching regarding what Jesus did, and then there's practical teaching regarding what we must do. In chapter 2, it says we must pay the most careful attention, therefore, to what we've heard so that we don't drift away. In chapter 3, it says, encourage one another daily as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. There's doctrinal stuff, and statements about what so, and then there's practical stuff, statements about so what. In chapter 11, it says, now faith is the confidence of what we hope for, the assurance of what we do not see. And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists, that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. And then there's application stuff that answers the question, so what? In chapter 12, it says, therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles us, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. There are believing parts, things that we're supposed to understand and know and believe. Like in chapter 4, it says, the word of God is active, alive and active, sharper than any double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joints and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of the heart. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give account. There's believing parts, and then there's behaving parts. In Hebrews 13, on the last page, it says, marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. For God will judge the adulterer and the sexually immoral. Keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, because God said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And then there's the interesting part in Hebrews, I think it's interesting, that explains the whole reason God did that animal sacrifice thing. Because in chapter 9, it says, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. But then chapter 10 says, it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. So why did God do all that? Probably to get us ready for what he said in chapter 9, where he said, just as people are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many, and he will appear a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. When you read through Hebrews, as we go through, you're going to realize this is a sermon. Did you hear about the man who pounded on, no, did you hear about the mom who pounded on her son's bedroom door saying, get up, get up, get up, it's Sunday morning, it's time for church. And the son said, come on, mom, I don't want to go today. And the mother said, too bad, you're going. And the son said, I'll give you two reasons why I'm not going today. Number one, I don't like anybody there. Number two, they don't like me. And the mom said, I'll give you two reasons why you are going today. Number one, you're 59 years old. And number two, you're the preacher. Hebrews is a sermon that got preached. And it's got a lot of good stuff in it, which we will see over the next 40 days. I'm really glad that God has kept this sermon for us all these years. And I'm glad that somebody once got up and preached this sermon. So many good lines in it. But so that we don't miss the forest for the trees, let me sum up the main point of Hebrews in two words. But before we do that, the category is, what are you doing? And this is how it went. Buying a juicer. You got that one, right? Buying a juicer. What are you doing? Buying a juicer. Pat Sajak then said, "This game makes no sense," which is true. Let me solve the Wheel of Fortune puzzle for you from the sermon called Hebrews. The Wheel of Fortune puzzle looks like this. And the answer is better than. The point of Hebrews is that Jesus is better than. This sermon is going to say that Jesus is better than anybody or anything else. He is better than angels. He is better than Moses. He's better than the tabernacle. He's better than laws. He's better than sacrifices. He's better than the high priest. He's better than Judaism. He's better than everything. The whole point of this sermon is that following Jesus is better than being an Old Testament Jew. In fact, it is the best thing. It's better than being... Hebrews says being a Jew is good. It was great. God set that whole thing up. And being a Jew is good, but it's just a picture of what God really wants for people. There was a guy who saw a mouse run under the couch one night, and he thought, oh, I got to get him. So he went out and he got a trap, and he looked in the refrigerator, but there was no cheese. So he went back and he sat down again, started reading his magazine. And he came across this ad. It was a picture. It was the most beautiful picture of cheese that he'd ever seen. And he thought for a minute, and he went and got some scissors, and he cut out the picture of cheese, and he went over and he set the trap with a picture of cheese in it. And then he went to bed. And the next morning when he woke up, sure enough, there in the trap was a picture of a mouse. The Jewish religious system is a picture of the real thing. The real thing is following Jesus. The main drift of Hebrews is Jesus is better than whatever else you're going to try. And my hope is that by the time we get to the end of this series, you will know why that's true, and you will know how to live out Jesus' betterness in your life. Do a couple things for me, okay? As we spend this Lenten season together with Hebrews, do these things. I'm not going to ask you to do it because I can't say that. Number one, read it. Read Hebrews, a chapter a day. There are 13 chapters. That means you can go through twice in March if you'll just start reading a chapter a day. Or you could be very energetic and read two chapters a day, and you could get through Hebrews four times this month. Or you could go crazy and you could read 13 chapters in one day, and you could get through Hebrews 31 times this month. And if you did that, you will not believe how much more this will all make sense to you by the time we get to April. But at least a chapter a day, read Hebrews, read this sermon with us this month. Get this into how you think, what you know. Eat it up, for real. Number one, read it. Number two, I ask you over the next 40 days to show up. Please show up. Please be here on Sundays. I know some of you work Sundays and you can't. I get that. I know it's flu season, and if you're sick, we don't want you come in spreading anything you have. The only thing we want to spread here is love. Keep your influenza at home. That's why we put sermons online each week, so that we can be healthy. If you're sick, stay home. But if you can, be here and hear sermons in a group setting, because sermons are best heard live. You know that I love to attend things that you guys do, right? I come to stuff that you do. I go to musicals. I go to recitals. I go to concerts. I love to watch you sing and dance and play and cheer and skate. And I can't get to everything. Sometimes the best I can do is read the results online afterwards, which is the way that I've been following Cassidy Burroughs' high jumping career. Online, because I've never been able to get to one of her meets. Now, I know that Miss Burroughs can leap backwards in the air over most of the people who are standing out in our lobby afterwards. And actually, I wish she would. But yesterday, I got to go see Cassidy in the Section 5 state qualifier at RIT. And I got to tell you, being there is way more exhilarating than reading about it online afterwards. To see her set up and approach the bar and launch herself and kick her feet, it's so fun. To see her bounce out of the pit with her arms up in celebration, to see her run over and get a high five from her coach, to hear her mom squeal with delight, being there is way better than reading about it online. Plus, at this meet, there were several other things happening at the same time. There were the 55-meter hurdles. Wow, they run fast. There was pole vaulting. And there was that arm and hammer throw thing, whatever that thing is called. You know that thing where you spin around? It's like a torture ball from the medieval ages, and they swing it around on a chain, and then they release it. Some girl threw that thing almost past the barrier. She almost killed a judge who was not looking. And Jennifer, standing next to me, said, "Oh, yeah, that girl is the best in the nation. Not the best in our section, not the best in New York. She is the best in the United States." And I watched her do it, and when I watched her, it reminded me of the cross-eyed javelin thrower. Did you hear about the cross-eyed javelin thrower? He wasn't very good, but he always had the full attention of the entire crowd every time he threw. She threw that thing so far, and I got to see it, because I was there. Hebrews 10:24 says, "Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. It is better being here in person than hearing about it later. Be here." So number one, read it. Number two, be here, show up. Number three, would you bring friends? Hearing about Jesus while sitting in a congregation is a powerful thing. Sometimes it is where people choose to change their lives, to be given a new heart, to be reconciled to God, and to go to heaven. Even people who strongly oppose Christianity have sat here for a while and eventually said, "Wow, I want in." And I know you're afraid if you ask somebody to come, they might. And then you have to live with them and they'll leave thinking that's stupid. Why did you? Sometimes people come up to me and they say, "Okay, Walker, I'm going to bring somebody next week." And then you just look at me. And the implication is, "And you're not very good usually, so next week, really try to be good, okay?" So I promise, I'm going to try to be good this month, really. Like, Hebrews is full of interesting stuff, and I will find new jokes, and we'll ask God to help. So bring somebody with you during the next 40 days. It could change forever. And there were three of us standing around talking yesterday about a funeral where the person did not know Jesus. And it's so important that people know him, because he's better than anything. He's better than everything. Okay, so as of Friday, I have a 16-year-old niece now. That means as of Friday, we have a new driver in the family. That means as of Friday, you're in trouble. She got her permit. You have to take a written test to get your permit, 20 questions. She got 19 right. Her parents were so proud. I asked her, I said, "Kirsty, what question did you get wrong?" She said, "I don't know." I said, "They don't tell you?" She said, "They don't tell you." I said, "Okay, but what question did you not feel confident about?" She said, "All of them." That did not seem good to me when she said it. But as she goes, she'll get better. We all get better as we go. Following Jesus is like that, folks. And the more you do it, and the more you think about it, the better you'll get. So how about jump in with us on this one? And when we're done with this series, you'll end up better than you can believe. Let's pray.